Hey, this is Double J, Jeff Jarrett, WWE Hall of Famer, and you're listening to the My 1-2-3 Cents Podcast.
It's my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo! Kevin! You're stupid.
Hey friends, welcome to episode 508 of the My 1-2-3 Cents podcast. I am your host, Kevin Huntsberger, joined this week once again by Chad Smart. And Chad, how are things going for you this week? Any feedback or thoughts from the SummerSlam? And I didn't realize until the other day, there are three relatively big PLE slash pay-per-views in the month of August. So wrestling fans have lots to digest, lots to see and review over the next several weeks.
Yeah. Let's see. We talked SummerSlam after SummerSlam, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay. It's been a very confusing week because I've done absolutely nothing. yeah, we've got this. I think it's the La Nina winds coming in, or the La Nina storms, or whatever they are.
Okay.
The little girls that are coming in. So my allergies are totally affected right now.
Fun times.
Yes. Other than that, SummerSlam. It's, I've said it on the show. I know that I'm not the target audience for the WWE's product. I am not. But it's looking online, watching YouTube videos, watching reactions, and just seeing all the, oh my gosh, this was the greatest SummerSlam ever comments. Mm-hmm. And just being like, was it that good, or is it just that wrestling's been pretty mediocre, since WrestleMania? And I think WrestleMania was good, but I don't think it was as great as everyone said it. You know, it's the Marvel movie phenomenon I look at, where it's just like, oh, if we can get all these people together in one setting, then that makes it awesome. And storyline, who cares?
So, right.
You know, you and I have discussed offline. Especially after this last SmackDown, I know the fans went crazy for it. I'm curious to see where the story goes, because I think they killed off the aura of the bloodline, the new bloodline, the Timu bloodline, as people call them. You know, when you have one guy come out and wreck all three of them.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Why do you need to bring in teammates if that's what the plan is? You know.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah. It'll be interesting to see. And speaking of teammates, we're heading to England, London again for AEW, their big event. And I apologize. Is it All In or is it All Out?
No, it's All In. Then 2 weeks later is All Out in Chicago.
Okay. So All In, heading back to London. I think there's probably, kind of like what you said earlier, there's less hype and less buzz around this year's event, seemingly, because last year was the first time that Wembley has seen a wrestling show since SummerSlam 92, and now you're going back a year later. I almost think it would have been a better idea to find another stadium in Europe somewhere, because the appetite for wrestling over there is insatiable, it seems, because we saw it in the WWE pay-per-views earlier this year, and then of course last year's event at Wembley with AEW. It might have been a good idea to kind of move it around a little bit and see, but we're just a couple of 50-year-old fans that are sitting here on the sidelines watching and talking about it. But are you hyped up for AEW's big event overseas?
I'm sure I will be, more so once it gets closer. I don't know the geographic area of England. Mm-hmm. It seems like there seems to be soccer teams in every city, but the stadiums aren't necessarily, you know, like baseball stadiums here where, you know, they're pretty huge. Some soccer stadiums seem to be bigger than others and whatnot. So I don't know what other huge venues are available in, you know, in the area. I also think, you know, they put tickets on sale, I believe last October already. Mm-hmm. And so, and then it just seemed like every week they were like, hey, we're coming back in August. We're coming back in August. And it's like, if you're going to keep hyping on this every week for 10 months, like, I don't know if people just have tuned it out or ticket prices. I don't, you know, I know that's been one of the complaints with WWE's European PLEs is that the ticket prices were just insane for that market. And I believe AEW has sold like 45,000-50,000 tickets so far, which is down from last year. But, you know, it wasn't until probably 3 weeks ago that we started getting match announcements for the show. So I think you're, you know, it's kind of like WrestleMania where you have those diehard fans that are going to go because it's there. And then you'll have, you know, the secondary market fans that once they start seeing what's on the show will be more inclined, you know, it's going to be, am I interested in seeing that live or can I watch it at home?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, one last thing before we get into this week's topic, I know something that you were excited about or you seemed excited about was breakdancing at the Olympics.
Damn straight. Didn't you watch it? You were
sending me snaps about it. So I know you were watching.
I woke up at 6:30 Friday and Saturday morning to watch breaking at the Olympics. It was interesting. I don't know. I think because the entire competition lasted over 5 hours because they had the round robin tournament of 16 and then, you know, the semifinals, finals, whatever. But it got a little repetitive, I will admit, mm-hmm. but it was cool. It was fun. It was, I wish they would have played the breaking theme. I wish they would have had Jean-Claude Van Damme come out at the start to show off his fantastic moves that we saw in the movie Breaking. But, and I think, I still don't understand how America got third in the men's b-boy breaking and we let Canada win gold. That seems just wrong on so many levels. But I'm curious to see if the Australian female breakdancer Ray Gunn can translate her newfound internet fame into a bigger success.
Well, speaking of bigger, the French pole vaulter, I saw got offers from some adult websites too. So you probably, I don't want to say it, but you probably saw that coming. And so, yeah. The Olympics, very interesting. I think more talk about some of the obviously all part of the athletic events, but yeah, the things that, you know, 20 years from now, if we're still around, what will we be talking about? Well, it might be the pole vaulter and the Australian breakdancer and all that kind of fun stuff. So very interesting to say the least, this year's Olympics.
Yeah, I will say too, because of the breakdancing, the scheduling, I was also watching the rhythmic gymnastics, which I have never actually watched. You know, I've just seen photos or clips of people with the balls thrown up in the air and the hoops and the ribbons. And it's like, this is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. Watching it though, I'm like, holy crap, this is one of the most amazing things that I ever, like the skill level is just, I felt like Snoop Dogg at the Olympics watching it. I don't know if you watched any rhythmic gymnastics, but in 4 years, 2028, the Olympics are here in LA, which I can't wait to see how much of a cluster that is going to be, given the state of transportation in California, in Los Angeles. But yeah, I got to make my list of which events I'm going to try to get tickets to. And right now, breaking and rhythmic gymnastics are probably at the top.
Nice.
Okay. And badminton.
I'm looking forward to a pickleball being added eventually. Ooh. Maybe I'll make it to the Olympics with that.
Maybe.
Well, we're going to switch gears and transition into this week's topic, and that is Kevin Sullivan. And we know that earlier, as we're recording this on Sunday, we know that on Friday morning, woke up to the news that Kevin Sullivan had passed away at the age of 74. And I know, and I can't find any confirmation, but he had been involved in what was described as a horrific accident earlier in the summer, I think it was, or maybe, you know, even in late spring. I thought I heard on, you know, because Kevin Sullivan was part of the ad-free show network with Conrad Thompson. Ooh. He was doing Tuesdays with the Taskmaster. I thought Conrad at one point had said he got hit by a car. Now, I don't know if that was for sure what had happened or not, but I know that his health declined, even though someone had said earlier in the week it seemed like things were getting better for him. But unfortunately, he did pass away, again, at the age of 74. And I talked to Chad over the weekend and thought, you know, hey, let's do some sort of tribute show. And admittedly, you know, my first exposure to Kevin Sullivan, I think, was maybe a little different than yours. But we've talked before, growing up, we didn't have access. I know I didn't have access to Florida Championship Wrestling. And I know that's where he really kind of rose to fame. I remember reading and seeing pictures of him and being, you know, quite honestly, a little scared of the guy. I mean, he had that kind of satanic look and that cult feel in Florida, and saw and read about him in the magazines. And Chad, what were your first impressions and experiences of seeing Kevin Sullivan?
Well, you know, I was trying to think about this after you brought up the topic of recording on this, but I did watch Championship Wrestling from Florida. I remember that being my introduction to the Luger, as he was known before they added Lex. But I remember Kevin Sullivan being there. I don't fully remember any like major storylines or, you know, I remember him having his little entourage and and whatnot, but I couldn't tell. I'm trying to even think now. Purple Haze, I believe, was one of them, but I don't have any tangible concrete memories of that. I did go back and watch a few videos on YouTube, with promos and one match with Barry Windham, which I think is where Kevin Sullivan turned heel afterwards. But yeah, that was my first introduction, but I don't think it was really until the mid 90s with the Dungeon of Doom that those are the memories that I can really say, okay, that's Kevin Sullivan. That's the Kevin Sullivan that I know.
Yeah. Well, for me, it was then, you know, because again, I bought all the magazines back in the day, and I can remember there's one somewhere in my collection of, you know, him and Dusty Rhodes wrestling, and Dusty Rhodes is just pouring pools of blood. And Kevin Sullivan has, I think it's a chain either wrapped around his head or wrapped around his neck, and he's choking him out. And again, that kind of, you know, his entourage, Purple Haze and Mark Lewin. I remember Mark Lewin from World Class days. He was Maniac Mark Lewin, and I think he was with either Skandar Akbar or Gary Hart. I don't remember who managed him, but I remember him from those days and then seeing him in the pictures from Florida. And then, of course, his wife, Kevin Sullivan's wife, the Fallen Angel, who later we knew as Nancy Sullivan and then eventually Nancy Benoit. So it was a bit of a family affair there. My first memory seeing him on TV and actually watching him in action, whether it was wrestling or managing. And he was one of those interesting ones because he was able to do both. And I know, you know, at times Bobby Heenan and Mr. Fuji wrestled and managed, but to me and my fandom, they were always a manager first, even though I know back in the day they had wrestled. Kevin Sullivan was that kind of unique breed where he did both and did both pretty well. My first memory, though, is him being with the Varsity Club and managing Rick Steiner and Mike Rotundo. And that would have been probably like 87, 88, somewhere in that time frame. I thought, though, it was interesting because he still kind of was that dark character. Mm-hmm. Kevin Sullivan wore a hood and did, you know, some kind of weird things. And to be managing guys who were, you know, legitimate college athletes in this Varsity Club, to me, it was an interesting mix. And I don't know if it would have been made more sense for him to manage a more dark team, or if it would have made more sense for the Varsity Club to be more of, you know, take on his characteristics of that cult. Eventually Dr. Death, Steve Williams joined that group. You know, I just thought he was a unique character, that thick Boston accent. He kind of rose to fame, though, to me, in that time period of the mid to late 80s, and then going into, like you said, eventually transitioning into that Dungeon of Doom era.
Yeah, I completely forgot about the what you were just saying with the Varsity Club until right before you said it. I was like, oh, yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah.
That era as well. But yeah, he's an interesting, I guess, figure overall, because especially the early Florida day, like, would that gimmick work today? And I know, you know, we got the Wyatt Six, but
right,
I think Kevin Sullivan kind of went a little further into a realm that really, I mean, especially in WWE, which is more geared towards kids.
Yeah.
I don't think would have played well, but
yeah,
but you know, in AEW and especially in MLW, I think it would fit in these days, but yeah, it's just, you know, again, it's the changing of the times where, I mean, if you remember the whole Satanic Panic from the 80s, that I think, I don't know if that's what Sullivan was tapping into, but definitely if it wasn't intentional, it was a nice coincidence.
Well, and, you know, we talk about this quite often, too, of separating the wrestler from the real person. You know, we did this last week with the Hulk Hogan example and Terry Bollea. You know, we've talked about, you know, when Tom Cruise does an interview, he's on TV as Tom Cruise. He's not as, you know, whatever character it is in the movie that he's promoting. And so, I think for Kevin Sullivan, though, he was one of those, again, one of those unique ones for me that I had a hard time separating the character from the man. Because in my mind, there was this, I'm trying to think of the right word here. There was an aura, I guess, that he really was that way. He was so convincing, and I guess that's what I'm getting at. It's more of a testament to his character, and, you know, kind of like how the Undertaker never really broke the character of the Undertaker in public and that kind of thing. I think Kevin Sullivan, though, I didn't really think the Undertaker was a dead man, but Kevin Sullivan, I could have seen being that cult leader, and whether it was with the Purple Haze and Mark Lewin days, or the Varsity Club, or eventually the Dungeon of Doom, which was a little more campy and cartoony and kind of that, and we'll talk more about that in a minute, the comfort level for Hulk Hogan. But yeah, to me, he just, I think he was never on my, you know, top 10 list or anything like that. But as you get older, you learn things about these characters, these men and women in wrestling, and learn to appreciate or better understand. And from what I've heard too, he was a creative genius in some regards, and was behind a lot of the, you know, gimmicks and things that were going on in the WCW days and the Attitude Era days, and kind of maybe helped push WCW up that food chain back in the mid 90s with the NWO and some of the things that were going on there.
Yeah. You know, separating the man from the character, I was trying to think. I'm pretty sure that I met Kevin Sullivan at one of the Wrestle Cons or Wrestle events. I believe it was the one here in LA. Because I don't know if you can recall if we ever met him.
No, not at any of the things we did. No.
Yeah, I think it was the one here where.
I think you're right. I think you, in fact, I'll have to look I may have given it away already, but I think years ago you sent an autograph.
Okay. That's what I was trying to think. Yeah. And you know, the memory that I have of that is that he is not what you would have expected. You know, he was like, and this is stuff, you know, similar to what I've read since his passing, is that he was more just if you didn't know the wrestling side of him, he was just a guy from Boston, you know, because he had that thick, like you said, Boston accent that really came out, but very polite, very friendly, very, you know, and, you know, I think that's an interesting dynamic. I mean, I think he could have played Zodiac maybe in the Dungeon of Doom with the two or the yin yang. But yeah, it's, and I think, you know, maybe that helps when you have someone that is playing a character that is so different from them? Like taking Hulk Hogan, Terry Bollea, like that seems to be who the person is, you know, and mm-hmm. even like Ric Flair or The Rock, like they always say, you just take the natural charisma and turn it up to 11.
Yeah.
But when you do that, then I think that also starts the disassociation of who is, where does one stop and the other begin? And, you know, it's, I look at Alice Cooper, being a huge Alice Cooper fan. You know, he says, you know, when I'm on stage, it's Alice Cooper. When I'm off stage, even though he's legally changed his name now, when he's off stage, it's Vincent. But when he was hanging out with like Jim Morrison in the 80s, he's like, or in the 70s, it was like Jim Morrison was Jim Morrison 24/7. So I'm not really sure what point I'm trying to make here, other than the fact that Kevin Sullivan was, I think he was a good character on screen. And then, like you said, had the good mind for creative backstage and could separate the two halves to make mm-hmm. it work better.
Let me ask you this, and this is going to be the controversial portion, probably, maybe, of the
podcast. Oh, there's a match going on in hell right now. Knockout.
There are a lot of fans who 15 years, 16 years later, believe that Kevin Sullivan murdered
Chris Unalived, yeah.
family. I'm not going to lie. In the early days of the investigation, I kind of bought into that conspiracy theory. I have since, you know, changed my perception of it. But for 15 or 16 years now, he has still lived with that, because there are, you know, people even in the wake of his death have posted and continued to share that sentiment.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I have a question or you know, but I feel like he proved himself, you know, like you said, you met him and soft-spoken and you know, he was, you know, a real person. He was not this demonic devil type person.
Yeah.
And I can imagine that probably, you know, even though I don't know that he ever spoke publicly about it, I imagine for years that probably played into his mental health, his mental well-being of, you know, when there are people out there, and again, it's conspiracy theory and take it with a grain of salt, I guess, but it's got to be hard on you when people think that, or, you know, whisper or whatever, that you were involved in this horrific event that happened.
Yeah. I mean, I remember hearing that when, you know, things first went down. I hadn't heard it. I completely forgot about that theory. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, part of it is, you know, also looking back for Kevin Sullivan is knowing what we know now, would he have changed the Sullivan Benoit feud, which led to Nancy eventually, you know, leaving Kevin and marrying Chris Benoit? I think it's conspiracy. It just, everything else that has come out about that, I think unfortunately Benoit acted alone, mm-hmm. you know, due to whatever situation. But you know, conspiracy theories exist because, one, sometimes it's easier to create a scenario instead of accept the one that is the legitimate scenario. Mm-hmm. And other times, like I said, I believe in Bigfoot and Loch Ness Monster just because it makes life a little bit more interesting.
Well, do you think that, you know, when Sullivan ended up leaving WCW, I think he was released before WCW was sold. I always found it odd that he never, Kevin Sullivan, that is, was never hired by WWE. I obviously, by the early 2000s, I think his in-ring career was behind him. But like we talked about, you know, being behind some of these ideas and gimmicks and characters and development that way. I was surprised that he was never utilized in a creative capacity in WWE when so many other people throughout the years had been given a chance, given an opportunity. Do you think it's because of Chris Benoit being in WWE for so long? Or, because I read, and I didn't even realize this, he did do some stuff with TNA, Kevin Sullivan did.
Yeah, I'm just looking at his Wikipedia right now, trying to see what he did after WCW closed down, and I vaguely remember him being in TNA.
See, I have no recollection, but I wasn't watching regularly as you were.
Yeah, I mean, it says he made one appearance.
Oh, okay.
So, and then he did some work with Ring of Honor, but I never saw that aspect. Yeah, I don't know. You know, also he had kind of retired, you know, towards the end of WCW, he had gotten out of the wrestling. So maybe it was just with WCW closing down, it was a chance to move on to something different. Maybe he, you know, he didn't want to stay in the wrestling. I can imagine too, you know, especially after everything that went down in the dying days of WCW, it's, you know, it probably wanted just to get away and, you know, do something a little less taxing, like become a doctor.
Well, you know, 30 years ago, Hulk Hogan went from WWF to WCW. He came in the red and yellow. It was a huge shot in the arm, a boost for WCW. And in typical Hulk Hogan fashion, you know, he needed that heel factory. He beats Ric Flair, up, of course, right off the bat. But then he needs that heel factory of monsters and these larger-than-life, kind of out-of-this-world characters. And that's when the creation of the Dungeon of Doom comes into play. Curtis Iaukea, who I remember from being the Wizard back in WWF, managing Kamala for a brief period of time, is like the head guy, if you will. And then Kevin Sullivan is the Taskmaster, who is the guy that is escorting all of this cast of characters from, like, the Shark, who was Earthquake in WWF, Beefcake as Zodiac, Kamala is there as, you know, as himself. But we see all these guys that Hogan had worked with and beaten in WWF. It's happening again in WCW. At the time, I thought it was stupid and cheesy as hell. Now, 30 years later, I get the nostalgia. And then after hearing Eric Bischoff kind of explain, you know, Hulk Hogan was going to do what was more comfortable for him at that time, because he's not going to go in there and wrestle a guy like Arn Anderson or, you know, some of the more technical wrestlers. Steve Austin was there at the time, and Brian Pillman. So it was easier for Hogan to go in there and wrestle those names that he had been in there with and had that comfort level with. I just found it very interesting in that, you know, I think Kevin Sullivan was a big part of that. And then helping, because along the way, you know, the Giant got involved, and so there were other characters brought in. And that's when we had that little taste, if you remember, of Hulk Hogan kind of going dark, and because they had shaved his mustache off, and he came out and wearing all black, and was, I don't want to say he was a tweener at the time, but it was kind of that first taste of heel Hulk Hogan. And eventually they pulled the trigger on it. And I think, and I don't know how much creative Sullivan was with that, but it all kind of helped change the trajectory of wrestling. And by 96, though, when we're getting a more realistic edge with the NWO, things like the Dungeon of Doom become more hokey and silly and goes away. But I could have seen that working even in that time period in the WWF, because we were still doing Doink in the Bushwhackers and Grossi and TL Hopper kind of gimmicks.
Yeah. You know, I've said it many, many times on this show. I am not a Hulkamaniac. I was more of a WCW fan than WWF. And so when Hogan came in, I thought it was like, oh, you know, that's a big get. When he beats Ric Flair for the title on his first match, I was very upset. You know, maybe part kayfabe, part in storyline. The Dungeon of Doom to me it felt like something that should have been in WWF. It was not what I wanted in WCW, and the reasoning you just laid out, it makes perfect sense, and especially given the power that Hogan had creatively. But it was, you know, I wanted Flair, Austin, Pillman, Steiner, you know, these guys that could wrestle. Or I think, you know, I'll kind of segue tangent into today's wrestling. Like, you know, I don't want AEW to be WWF light. I think that's why it took TNA almost 20 years to be as successful as they are now, because they didn't have their own identity. Mm-hmm. And so I was not a Dungeon of Doom fan, especially given some of the gimmicks, you know, like, I mean, turning Earthquake into the shark.
And yeah. Then
eventually having him come out and be like, I am not a shark. I am not a fish. I am a human. It's like, okay.
But going back to your point earlier in the podcast about Roman Reigns coming back and, you know, doing this, we're speculating this War Games of Roman's bloodline versus Timu bloodline or Solo Sikoa bloodline. Yeah. I mean, and they may throw us a twist or a twerve or, but whatever, but they've established that Roman is the man and the top guy. And that same year that we're talking about in 1995 with the Dungeon of Doom, you know, that year's War Games, it was Hulk Hogan, Randy Savage, Sting, and Lex Luger. Probably the four biggest stars in WCW in that time period against the Dungeon of Doom. And I think it was Shark, and I don't have it in front of me. I think it was Shark, Kamala, Zodiac, and one other guy. And it's like, I mean, come on. You know who's going to win this.
Right.
Even though back in the day, the faces always won War Games anyway. But even before, you know, at least when it was the Horseman versus Dusty and the Road Warrior, you know, there was that you know, intrigue of, you know, well, the Horseman could cheat and pull this off and win and whatnot. But it was, again, that balance wasn't there of obviously it's going to be Hogan's team dominating this.
Well, I mean, I think that's part of the problem with Hogan anyway, is that Hogan never lost. And that's, I guess, in a sense, the same way with Roman Reigns, is that, you know, if he doesn't lose, and John Cena and Cody Rhodes, you know, it's like, there's no balance there. But I don't know. It is what it is.
Yeah. And, you know, do you think, though, that the Kevin, you know, because during the Monday Night War, we always saw just about everybody except for Sting, except for The Undertaker and Shawn Michaels, guys were jumping back and forth. You know, names like Lex Luger and the Road Warriors and the Steiners, they all eventually wrestled for WWF, eventually go back, of course. And then you've got the guys that are jumping from the WWF, you know, Jeff Jarrett and you know, a handful of those other guys that were going over and coming back and forth. But, you know, Kevin Sullivan's another one of those. Like I said before, never saw him cross over. I think he would have worked in some capacity in Attitude Era. I part of the Ministry of Darkness or something along those lines. Maybe he would have been too much, though, for that. And because they already had a lot of people involved with that. But I could have seen him and would have liked to have seen him, I think, go to the WWF for a minute and be a manager of some kind. Again, that was when managers were kind of becoming a dying breed in the WWF especially. But I think I would have liked to have seen a run for him on the other side as well.
Well, I wonder, according to Wikipedia, he's billed at 5'9". I don't know if he's actually 5'9", or maybe a little, you know. And I would look at, to compare it, Taz.
Yeah.
He's probably also around the same size. So I think, especially WWF in that era, it's a big man's game. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Kevin Sullivan coming in, would Vince McMahon have kind of a bias towards him not looking, you know, the thought I'm trying to get out here is that just that because he didn't fit in physically, cosmetically with the rest of the roster, would that have hindered a Kevin Sullivan WWF run?
You know what, though, as you were talking about that, I think he would have been, imagine when the higher power unveiled himself, imagine if it would have been Kevin Sullivan. I think that place would have, you know, it would have been probably better than how it ended with Vince McMahon being the higher power, but just, I'm thinking of different scenarios because sometimes you think about timing and, you know, this guy wouldn't work here because of this, you know, what would you have done with XYZ? Yeah. You know, people talk about, oh, Rick Rude or Jake the Snake Roberts should have had a run as world champ. And it's like, well, how would you have fitted into the, you know, the real timeline that was going on? But I do think Kevin Sullivan would have been one of those guys as a manager. Now, I'm not saying, because by that point too, by the late 90s, he's probably what, pushing 50 or right at 50. So I, and not that that's old now, because we do see guys like Chris Jericho and, you know, Bobby Lashley and some of those other guys that are near or at 50 that are still going at full speed. So, I'm saying though, I still think that he could have been a player in some realm or aspect, but you know, again, he was good for WCW and kept things competitive. So, you know, you again, we do that alternate universe thing, and how would have WCW been impacted or affected by him jumping ship and not being a part of the creative process over there as well? Because I don't know that they would have used him as a creator in WWE, but again, I think that on-camera talent role of a manager would have fit with the Attitude Era probably better than the 80s era. Because he was a little too over the top, I think, for WWF fans in the 80s.
Yeah. That's an interesting thought. It's, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, where does he fit in? I mean, I like your idea of him being part of the ministry. I think that would have worked. Definitely would have been better than what we got. But at the same time, I mean, yeah, the APA kind of when they broke off, they became better than what they were in the ministry. Yeah. But you know, having Midian and Gangrel still, you know, again, Edge and Christian also got better after they left and dropped the vampire gimmick. But yeah, I think that was, you know, sort of the dying days of the over the top gimmicks. So
yeah,
could Sullivan have come in and brought, and this is going to sound kind of ridiculous given the Dungeon of Doom connection, but could he, Sullivan, have come in and brought a little bit more realism into the gimmick and or into that faction?
Yeah. One other quick one that I thought about it earlier and forgot about it, and it came back when you were talking again, is those ridiculous gimmicks of the early 90s. It wasn't exclusive to WWE. In 91, we got Oz, Kevin Nash, who later went on to become Diesel, and then Kevin Nash, and of course, one of the bigger superstars of all time. But his manager back then was the Wizard, who was Kevin Sullivan. So I think, and I'm trying to remember, I think, though, as the Wizard, he was concealed and was in a mask. And I don't know if
they took the mask off to wrestle.
So did he actually wrestle as the Wizard?
I'm sorry. I was thinking Nash.
Nash took the mask off, but I don't know if
I don't think Kevin Sullivan did it.
What's that?
I don't think Sullivan ever wrestled. I don't even know how many appearances he made.
Yeah, it wasn't much.
With Nash.
Yeah. And I think they had a pet monkey that, because they were going for that whole Wizard of Oz theme.
Because Turner had just bought the rights to the Wizard of Oz, and they were trying to synergy.
I think that monkey, unfortunately, met an early demise too. But again, I was just starting college, and so I was watching still, but not watching as regularly. And I don't remember if I knew at the time that Kevin Sullivan was the Wizard. But you know, an amazing body of work, a great career. I'm going to assume he lived a happy life as well. He 74 years old, but it's never easy losing someone, whether you're a fan of them or, you know, family member or friend or whatever the case may be. But we just wanted to spend a little time paying tribute and sharing some memories and thoughts on Kevin Sullivan. Chad, do you have any other final thoughts or memories that you want to share before we wrap up this week?
I'm trying to think. I think, you know, another topic that we've discussed or thought that we've thrown out several times on the show is, as kids, we didn't fully appreciate the talent of some of these wrestlers that we grew up with, because we didn't look at the wrestling business the way that we look at it now. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, Same way, you know, we've said, like, I hated Roddy Piper at WrestleMania 1 because I was supposed to hate Roddy Piper. I didn't get that he was doing his job well, you know.
Right,
I
just,
and I think Kevin Sullivan's another one that can go in that group where I'm like, yeah, I appreciated him, you know, especially his feud with, like, with Benoit and Pillman and things. But I don't think I fully appreciated what was going on behind the scenes with Kevin Sullivan.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
able to blur those lines. You mentioned
Pillman. Yeah. Someday I may get there with Randy Orton.
I have done a 180 on Randy. So, but yeah, we will talk more wrestling and nostalgia in the weeks to come. But friends, I wanted to thank you all for joining us, tuning in, watching, and or listening to this week's episode. Be sure to leave a review, leave us your thoughts, and we will talk again soon.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.